The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Europe's security landscape is changing rapidly as the war in Ukraine continues to shape defence policy right across the continent. So how does the EU military view the trajectory of the war, and what does it mean for countries like Ireland with a long tradition of military neutrality? And of course, there's the complication of what's going on in the Middle East as well. To talk about all of this, I'm joined now by General Sean Clancy, the former Chief of Staff of the Irish Defence Forces, now Chair of the European Union Military Committee, the EUMC. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Good to see you in your new role.
Thank you.
Two people in their new roles here talking to each other. Tell me this. What exactly is your job in the EU?
Yeah, thank you. Well, the EU Military Committee is like a committee of council, if you like, in the EU. It's made up of the 27 member states. The chiefs of defence sit on the formal council, and their representative, which are generally flag or general rank, sit on a week-to-week basis. My role is to chair that committee and that council. I've been elected independently by the actual chiefs of defence through a closed vote, if you like. So having received that task and that honour and privilege, I've been serving in it since the 1st of June 2025 last year.
Mm-hmm. Now, the problem, I suppose, I mean, the EU talks about the defence of the EU, but we are not a member of NATO. Many of the countries in the EU are also members of NATO, and we are committed to military neutrality. So how easily or uneasily does that all sit?
Well, I think it should, we should be comfortable with it. I think we have a duty to be comfortable with it. We're an EU member state, and EU is not a military alliance. It's a union of member states, and it's built on the principles of values and of integration right across the European continent. NATO is different. It's an alliance, and it's a military alliance. So the military committee in the European Union is geared towards, if you like, common security and defence policy. It's geared towards humanitarian efforts. It's geared towards operations and missions that are commensurate with the values of the European Union. And the military committee has a role then in putting forward the military advice and the advice of the 27 member states in this regard. So it's completely compatible, if you like, with our status of neutrality.
But these initiatives, I'm sure when you sit around the table and you all discuss these things, there may be obligations placed on Ireland by virtue of those discussions.
Well, Ireland is a fully fledged member of the EU. I mean, it has commands very high popularity in terms of the sense of belonging that the Irish people feel with them as a member of the EU. And this is just one of the many areas. Of course, the EU covers the whole spectrum from food and industry to economics to social welfare, right across the whole gamut. And military defence and security as a whole is just one pillar within the European Union.
But so I presume Ireland, there's no Article 5 type arrangement as there is in NATO, where an attack on one would be deemed an attack on all.
No, there isn't. Absolutely, you're absolutely correct. But we must be conscious, of course, of not duplicating anything that NATO has, and that's the intent. And Ireland is very clear in terms of how it engages with the European Union. This was taken into explicit consideration, of course, during the treaties, and the Lisbon Treaty in particular, where Article 42.7, which is a mutual assistance clause that's within that treaty. And that clause, of course, gives rise specifically to those neutral countries and their particular status. So that's fully respected and continues to be respected within the European Union.
So as a neutral country militarily, how would that mutual assistance be used in terms of Ireland's involvement? I mean, if one of our fellow EU countries is in trouble, in some sort of difficulty, how would we be expected to respond?
Well, every country is expected to respond and to be substantive response in this regard, but within their means and capabilities. So firstly, for that article to be exercised, the particular country has to invocate it. So it has to say, we're under particular attack or some form of crisis and we need support. The second part then is to actually activate it, and that country states what it needs, and then member states responds to the needs at that particular time of that country.
Would this be similar to, for example, in Ukraine, we don't supply weaponry, but we may have given them some help with minesweeping, with all of that kind of thing? In other words, not offensive activities, but certainly useful activities.
No, in the first instance, it must be a member state has to activate it. So, for example, the only time that this was activated was during the Bataclan in Paris in France.
Okay.
When France was under pressure from its very wide sweeping engagement in the security and defence realm. And it reached out to other member states and said, we need some support to take up our obligations in the common security and defence policy areas in other countries so that we can concentrate on our own national security at this point in time. So member states contributed or took over some of the responsibilities that France had at that time in Africa, for instance, in the Sahel and in other regions, so that France, for a period of time, when it was under pressure at this given period, which was very serious, of course, but that didn't reach a threshold, for instance, as France, as an ally, for Article 5 to be exercised.
Sure. France did not invoke in under NATO Article 5 because this was an internal domestic crisis, a policing crisis,
correct.
I suppose.
Yeah.
So they didn't invoke Article 5. In that time when France looked for help, did Ireland do anything for France in that regard?
No, but Ireland, of course, was active in the common security and defence policy area. As you know, over the periods of time, we've been involved in Liberia and Chad and other areas. And other countries.
But we didn't have to take over some of their peacekeepers.
Absolutely not. This was about putting perhaps one or two human resource assets in place to take up staff work or other issues to enable France to release other bigger countries contributed in a more significant way at that time. But as I said, it's within means and capabilities of the member states.
Now, you know the way people listening to this will say, this is, if you like, mission creep. Eventually, we're going to be abandoning our neutrality. There's going to be an EU army and we will be part of that army.
No, I want to be very clear here because, I mean, often the question of neutrality is conflated with responsibility. And Ireland, all of the EU member states, as I said, they all respect the fact that not only Ireland, but three other member states are also neutral. And that is respected and is not contested. And in fact, we in Ireland probably think more about how others think about our neutrality than we do ourselves, if I can be quite frank. But what member states do expect is Ireland to take its responsibilities seriously. It expects solidarity from all member states. And this is part of my job, of course, to make sure that that is there. And we expect member states to be prepared. And in those three guises, solidarity, preparedness and taking responsibility. In other words, doing their bit. And Ireland is doing its bit. And, you know, with the maritime strategy, with the investments that's there, with the leadership team that is there now in the defence forces, in the military apparatus, in the Garda Síochána, in the policing apparatus, and, of course, with Minister McEntee, who is showing great interest and great drive in this area as well, having been a former Minister for Justice and now Minister of Defence. I think Ireland is well armed, if you like, if I can use the pun, in this space. And I think the future looks that Ireland is recovering from what was, right across Europe, by the way, a decline in investment in these areas in the past.
Now, in terms of our relationships then with other EU countries, will there be a drive to maybe have common equipment specs that there will be, if you like, a European norm rather than each country going about procuring its equipment as it sees fit?
Yeah, well, I mean, this would be preferable. For sure, because that drives efficiency, it drives interoperability, it drives coherence, it eliminates duplication. And these are all words, I know, but these are facts. We have a very fragmented industry across Europe, and that what fragmentation leads to is higher costs. And of course, the supply does not meet the current demand because demand is being driven, of course, at the moment by what we're seeing right across Europe or right across the globe, and Ukraine being the central focal point of that for the last 4 years, of course. So a more coherent industry with fewer specs, if you like, less equipment, but more efficient equipment is what's needed. An example of this would, for instance, and I don't want to overemphasize this, but the US has maybe 30 major weaponry systems.
Mm-hmm.
Europe, between us, have 178.
Okay.
So this goes to the essence of that US is a defragmentized or has a small number of primes, as they say, whereas Europe works on a kind of a very fragmented basis, often driven by national solidarity.
So you can see how very complex supply chains can be disrupted, one critical part not available because of a particular supply chain, and then a problem.
Yes, correct. And for the last three decades, Europe as a whole has reduced its investment in its defence and security. That has led to gaps appearing right across right across all member states and others. My job and jobs of others in Europe at the moment is to identify the gaps and try and create conditions for those gaps to be closed. And part of this is the consideration of reducing the number and the vulnerabilities around multiple types, create efficiencies, bring costs down, and ensure, and this is all being done, of course, to create the conditions for deterrence ultimately, to create conditions for preparedness and readiness right across Europe, not only, of course, in defence and security, but in every other area of our critical national structure, our ability to respond to hybrid threats and many, many threats that exist today that are magnified on a daily basis.
Now, I know we have relationships with, for example, our next door neighbour, and Helen McEntee was talking about a refreshing of a joint cooperation deal in terms of maritime security. She was talking about that yesterday. But I was listening to Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart talking about the depletion of the naval forces of the Royal Navy, that they have very few vessels that are fit for purpose anymore.
This is the gaps I'm talking about. Ireland is not unique. This is a decline that is clear and ever present right across all of the member states. And what has happened by Ukraine primarily is that this has catalysed and refocused the prioritisation of the need for our own defence and security, to build our own readiness and our preparedness. And, you know, Europe, for instance, and through the EU, they have now built 8, now 9, actually since January, security and defence partnerships. So this is not something new. Mm. Ireland and the UK, primarily because of our geography, and France as well, of course, we have engaged in partnership throughout the last number of decades. So this is nothing new, but what is happening now and what we're seeing is a deepening of the partnership, in particular in the defence and security domain, which is a real and significant threat right now.
Now, we know that we have UNIFIL forces in Lebanon who are coming under significant fire at the hands of the Israelis and perhaps caught in crossfire from Hezbollah. How important are missions like that still? Because, you know, we are not a NATO force, and therefore, kind of battle-hardening people a little bit is important for any defence forces.
Well, of course, I mean, you know, we train so as not to go to war, if you like, and we don't like speaking those terms. We're a peacekeeping nation, if you will, and the Lebanon has been, I suppose, the guiding light for the last number of decades for Ireland. You know, it saddens me to see what's happening in Lebanon today. I know that the Secretary General of the UN is there presently trying to open up dialogue, trying to create conditions and look for ways forward. The Lebanon offers opportunities, I suppose, to exercise your training in real time. And that creates a more strengthened, more resilient and more prepared security force. And that's what every country should be striving for. Of course, we've seen the extremists in that in terms of Ukraine, which is not something we want to see. But perhaps one of the most prepared forces in Europe, on the continent of Europe right now, is Ukraine. And we all want to see Lebanon return to a peaceful accord right now in order for that, what was happening in the past has happened over the last 18 months now, for, you know, really good political leadership and dialogue to take hold and return to that
space. I'm sure, you know, Ukraine is top of the agenda for your committee a lot of the time, but there's no doubt that the impact of the Gulf War is going to be subject of much discussion. But when you look at Ukraine, they are defending themselves against the Russian invasion at the moment, 4 years in, no sign of this war ending. If the Russians were to succeed and overrun Ukraine and then go into Poland, Poland would invoke Article 5 because being members of NATO, they would expect NATO forces to help them. But suppose some of our fellow EU members in the Baltic, for example, were attacked by Russia and they invoked the article calling for our assistance. What would we be required to do?
Well, the Baltic states, by and large, they're all allies and members of NATO in the first instance. So an attack on any of those states would trigger Article 5. I think that's fairly certain. And of course, this is...
But you might have two articles being invoked, Article 5 and the EU article.
And that is a possibility. And of course, we have to look at that and deconflict the two of those things. But this is the very reason why we have to support Ukraine. This is why we have to continue and sustain our support for Ukraine, because Ukraine's being sustained, winning, if you like, our we achieving a just, comprehensive and fair outcome to that war, that strengthens the peace and security of Europe for the future. And we are very conscious of the fact that the scenario that you have painted could well well happen. And this is why we need to prepare now. And we need to set up the deterrence now. And this is, of course, why NATO are doing that. But this is not my job. But my job is to ensure that the EU member states have the means and capabilities they require from a national perspective for their own preparedness in the first instance and their own resilience. And part of the job for us, of course, not only being prepared to support Ukraine, is to be ready ourselves and being prepared to learn from Ukraine so that we can bring what they have learned to bear so that we're prepared and can deter that very scenario happening.
Do you think that we need to have a more robust public discussion about all of this? I mean, we do it on the radio all the time, but in terms of the general, in involving the general population in conversations like this?
I think conversation is good. I think we have seen a change in that in this country. I think there is a more openness to actually the fact that defence and security is important. And it's not important because of the kinetic issues we're talking about. It's important because our banking systems need to be robust. Our critical national infrastructure needs to be protected. Our energy systems need to be protected. We need to make sure we have oil flowing into the country at whatever price it is, given the effect of what's happening globally. And all of these things require security and defence. And they need to be actually guaranteed. And we need to build in redundancies and resilience into our systems. And all of this is what we really need to discuss.
And meanwhile, you know, hybrid warfare, cyber warfare, all happens right under our noses.
Well, I mean, with a clear example this week in Stryker. Stryker was a US-based company, 56,000 employees worldwide. It was hit by an Iranian proxy, by a cyber attack, 200,000 systems on their systems affected. Stryker employs 4,000 people in Ireland. So what's happening in the Middle East, not only the oil, you mentioned, I think, during early conversations about phosphates and fertilizers, you know, the majority of fertilizers are reliant on the phosphates that come through the Straits of Hormuz. So we are directly and indirectly affected by these issues.
It involves
us all.
General Sean Clancy, former Chief of Staff of the Irish Defence Forces, now Chair of the European Union Military Committee, the EUMC. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.